While serving as the executive director of the Pollinator Partnership for the past 17 years, Lori oversaw the initial organization and development of the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, or NAPPC, the 120-plus member collaboration of stakeholders from Mexico, Canada, and the United States who work in a variety of fields, including science, the environment, agriculture, and private industry. NAPPC's successes under Lori include the National Academy of Sciences NRC study on the status of the pollinators of North America, the U.S. Postal Service's pollination stamp series, and the U.S. Senate and USDA proclamations creating National Pollinator Week. Please help me welcome Lori.
Thank you, John.
There you go. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John, and it's my pleasure to be here today. I have long dreamed of addressing the ASTA group. I had hoped it would be to talk about the development of seeds for habitat on utility rights of way and transportation corridors and farm buffers and really working together to create habitat for pollinators. But I am delighted to be able to be called to talk to you about a very important topic, the Corn Dust Research Consortium. I have worn pink today so that you can find me later, however, if you want to talk about seeds for habitat. I'm happy to do that as well. In addition, I also want to thank the previous speakers because if you listen to Sunny's talk about biotic and abiotic forces that are working against your industry, if you also listen to Dan about prices falling and about exports falling, I'm sure you're in the mood for a hopeful talk. And you were going to get one from the environmentalist at the stage. So I think that's something to look forward to. And as the product of a land-grant university, the University of Illinois, hopefully you'll see that we work together for pollinators, but we also work quite collaboratively. So I'm grateful for this opportunity. My talk has five parts: pollination and pollinators, who we are and why we're here, human behavior and pesticides, the issue that you're most interested in, honeybees and corn planting, and the Corn Dust Research Consortium. Many of you may not know how pollination works across the board, so it is actually the transfer of pollen, the pollen grains from the male part of the plant to the female part of the plant, but it doesn't just happen by wind and water and self-pollination. It also happens through animal assists and not just through honeybees, through a variety of animal pollinators who are working as unseen workers throughout the world. And it's really the interaction with plants that makes pollinators so important. Why does this matter? It's 70% of all flowering plants rely on animals for their pollination. And the value of this in terms of global crop-based pollination services is $217 billion U.S. One out of every three bites of food comes to you from a pollinator. So this morning's breakfast, I'm pretty sure, was touched by a pollinator if it had coffee or orange juice or tomato juice or apple juice. Or if you had grapefruit, if you had fruit, if you had berries on your cereal, and even some dairy products which are fed, dairy cattle which are fed alfalfa. We are also cognizant of the fact that in 15 years we have a billion more people to feed with the same or diminished resources, and you certainly heard a lot about that today. But it isn't just food that pollinators interact with. It's ecosystem services that bring us raw materials, fibers, oils, some of the semi-tropical and neotropical woods that we rely on, teak and rosewood, mahogany, one half of the world's oils, all the wildlands that we care about. If you're a hunter, a hiker, if you're a bird watcher, you care about the fact that pollinators are busily keeping the understory of the forest healthy. Climate regulation. Obviously, this is an important process, and most of the large forests rely on their understory to be supported by pollinating animals. Nutrient cycling. These are animals that dig nests and recycle materials, and they aerate the soil as they do so. And erosion control. Many of the plants, particularly where I'm from in California, where I'm from now, I was from Illinois, but if you went outside today, you know why I'm now from California. Especially in California, we're very cognizant of the need for these plants to hold our hillsides and to keep erosion control at check. But globally, we're seeing decline in pollinators, and there are a variety of reasons. It isn't just pesticides. Particularly, it's loss of habitat. And again, if you saw the earlier presentations, you saw that we're losing land in production agriculture. We're losing land in habitat as well. We're also suffering a great deal of disease, parasites, invasive species, which also bring parasites and disease. Climate change is particularly difficult for pollinators, which are regulated by temperature and by the phenology that has the bloom in synchronous with their emergence. And then pesticide misuse. So what is the pesticide problem? Pesticides will kill pollinators given the right dose or the right situation. Pesticides can also not kill pollinators given the proper use and the right situation. But we've had a history of bee die-offs that have been somewhat aligned with pesticides, and sometimes they're quite different. CCD is the latest of the scourges that has caused bee die-offs, but it has been identified by the USDA and the EPA in their recent reports as something that is a multifactorial problem. Many contributing factors. Pesticides, though, are particularly difficult to deal with because there are so many points of impact with pollinators. I've listed some of them. I won't go through them all, but you can see there's a full variety of ways that pesticides, pesticide residues, different forms of application, different applicators, all can affect pollinators. And policy regarding pesticides and pollinators is somewhat driven by science, but we know science can also be ambiguous and sometimes not as precise and clear a director as we would like it to be. Policy is also driven by emotion and by economics. All these are factors that you have to consider as you look at the pollinator landscape currently in the U.S., but also across the globe. We are trying to engage multiple groups to reduce the impact of pollinators, regulatory agencies, registrants and manufacturers such as yourselves, certified applicators, also again such as yourselves and farmers, homeowners and consumers. So who are we? Why are we doing this? We're the largest organization in the world that deals exclusively with pollinator issues. We do policy, education, research, and on the ground restoration and conservation. My organization is a 501c3 nonprofit. We get funding from everyone. If you haven't given us funding, I'm in pink. You can come and see me. We take money from governments, from private industry, from individuals, from foundations. We take money from everyone, and we have a very clear giving policy. Give us money, and you don't expect any change in our position or results. We work for pollinators, and we work collaboratively, and we are very, very open and transparent. What do we do? For example, we have produced 33 ecoregional guides that give recipes in all of the lower 48 states and Hawaii on how you can help pollinators, free on our website. We translated that into a smartphone application. You can get that free at your app store. We have agreements with 13 federal agencies managing 1.5 billion acres. We do policy. We are very involved in the Farm Bill. We were instrumental in the 2008 Farm Bill having pollinator provisions for the very first time in the research and the conservation titles. We are very supportive of the Farm Bill right now. We would like to see it enacted. We are trying to get the Transportation Act to have similar provisions to support pollinators. We are conducting original research in 11 states as we speak, and we run something called the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign, which, again, you're welcome to join or register your pollinator habitat on our SHARE program, which stands for Simply Have Areas Reserved for the Environment, SHARE. Share a little bit of your farm, share a little bit of your school, your corporation, your parks. Some of our partners, it's everyone. We bring everybody to the table, all the stakeholders. Our mission is to support the health of pollinators through constructive engagement with everyone. We don't expect our partners to agree with one another. We expect them to agree with what we're trying to do. We're science-based, we're inclusive. We provide internet sources. Please go to pollinator.org. There is so much information there. And we support scientific assessment. As John pointed out, we were the supporters and really the initiators for the National Academy of Sciences NRC study on the status of pollinators. We initiated Pollinator Week, which this year or next year will be June 16th through the 22nd, 2014. You're welcome to have a pollinator event, again, on pollinator.org. But one of our strongest pushes is human behavior. Human behavior and pesticides in particular, we think, is an untapped resource. We wrote a book called Measuring Results and Changing Behavior. This is all about how do you get people to do things that will help the situation? How do you get them to change their behaviors? We worked on this. It's available again on our website. But a couple of the things that we found out were you have to start where people are. You don't start at the perfection that you hope to achieve. You start where they are. You give clear, demonstrable behaviors. You act as a credible source, and you look for incremental change. Our view of pesticides is that you should avoid pest problems in the first place. Meet the pest threshold first, diagnose the problem accurately, use IPM, and only when other measures fail, carefully select a pesticide and carefully select an application method. That's a different message than let's get rid of pesticides. However, now we're in a new world. That worked very well before prophylactic systemic pesticides, which solve some problems and potentially create others. The decision is made to use the pesticide before there's evidence of the problem. They're ubiquitous. 90% of all U.S. agriculture, at least, and when you talk about corn, probably 99%, are already in this system. So it's a new world, and we're looking at how we can deal with that new world. Pesticides interact with pollinators. We have found 134 different chemicals identified in colonies and 4.3 per bee. So which is the chemical that's the culprit when you talk about problems with bees? We act as a resource. We have all of the research papers that we can find, 150 of them, on neonicotinoids and pesticides. They're on our website. We have acted with NAPSE to create two brochures, again, free on our website. One for professional applicators on how they can do less harm as they apply pesticides, and also for homeowners, the same message. These were worked on by everyone, the beekeeping associations, representatives from EPA, the pesticide industry, the scientists who study bees, and nonprofits. We all work together. They're not watered down. They're very clear. Please go and look at them. We're also filming beekeepers and farmers who are doing the right thing. Again, a credible source. We're trying to help them help others do the right thing. And starting in January, we should have the final version of our Protecting Pollinators Manual. It's a course, a continuing education course, that will help applicators, again, understand the problem and see what they can do to reduce the harm. But the issue you care most about is honeybees and corn planting. As you know, corn does not need animal pollinator visits to reproduce. But honeybees are very attracted to corn pollen, and they take it back to the hive. The current issue that we're dealing with, however, is not the plant or the pollen or the nectar. It's the planting. There have been previous corn incidences. As you know, in 2008 in Germany, there were instances where, in actual fact, during the sowing, there were, and sowing is a European term for planting, there was a failure of the coating, and that issue had been resolved. In 2012 and in 2013, Ontario reported a massive bee kills during corn planting. And as you probably know, the EU has enacted a restricted use for 2 years starting December 1st of imidacloprid and clothianidin and thymethoxin. So this is an interesting world in which we are operating. The NAPSE group has a honeybee health task force. We've done 35 grants in the last 5 years on bee health in a variety of problems: genetics, nutrition, best practices, pathogens and parasites, and then also pesticides. One of the grants that we gave was to Christian Krupke of Purdue University. He introduced the results of his study in front of the NAPSE audience, which, as you know, had all the stakeholders present. He found that the dust that was created by the lubricant inside the hopper for planting was quite absorbent and quite volatile. As you know, I don't need to tell this audience that most planting throughout the Midwest occurs in late April and early May. The fields have to be dry to be planted, and treated seeds are sticky, so they have these lubricants in the planter to ensure uniform planting. That was presented to everyone. Everyone was here. They all heard it at once. Solutions were discussed, and collaboration happened. And I have to compliment Bayer Crop Science because they stepped forward. And they said, let's do something about this. Thus was born the Corn Dust Research Consortium. Bayer and Syngenta came to us with some funding and said, we're having trouble testing these products and this situation. Actually, they went to EPA and they went to USDA and said, when we go to universities, we're having a hard time getting them to test our product. EPA and USDA said, why don't you go to the Pollinator Partnership? Why don't you see if they can broker something that will be viewed as transparent, neutral, and authoritative? When they came to us, we said, it's great, we'd love to work with you, but we want to involve some more partners. That's why we got the American Beekeeping Federation, the American Seed Trade Association, the American Honey Producers Association, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, and Bayer, and the Canadian Honey Council, the Farm Equipment Manufacturers Association, the National Corn Growers Association, Pollinator Partnership and Syngenta, and the University of Maryland, which has nothing to do with the issue but can be viewed as a neutral science input. Also, we'd like input from USDA AOS, the Canadian PMRA, and EPA. I want everyone to understand how hard it was for all of those groups to say, yes, we'll work on this together. This is a success. The fact that all of these groups put in some money, they put in some time, they oversaw this together. It's a success no matter what happens. And whatever happens, somebody's not going to be happy. But if everybody works together, and you can see how important the issue is because I've shown you how important it is to your everyday life, not just to your corn planting. So, the first question we asked, and we only asked two questions: what are the foraging conditions around corn fields at planting time, and how does a new alternative to current lubricants compare? That's it. We awarded the research to three different institutions: Iowa State University, Ohio State University, and the University of Guelph and the Grain Farmers of Ontario. The first two only answered the first question, and the third one answered the first and second question. And they received funding from other sources, so they actually did more outside of the scope, which isn't really what we wanted, but they had received this money. So we'll see how that all works out. Our time frame was we started this in February, and hopefully by this January we'll have some kind of report that will help in corn planting. But it's only the first year. And I'm happy to tell you we've received research funding for the second year as well from at least some of our partners. So what will these research recommendations be? Well, we're hopeful they'll be in time for spring planting. They're going to involve all stakeholders. That means everyone in this room. Seed treatment industry, pesticide industry, farmers, equipment, manufacturers, and beekeepers. This is going to have to be addressed by everyone because of point three. There is no one thing that we can do that will solve the problem. There is no one thing. This is what we're not. We're not endorsing anything. We didn't have a preconceived notion of how this was going to end up. It's not a CCD exploration. It's not applicable to soybeans. It's not anything but those two questions, honeybees and corn. But there are still some questions that remain that I want you to be thinking about. Do all the seeds have to be treated in every field every year? Can soil-borne pests be safely and effectively handled in another way, post-planting? Can crop rotation, soil samples for pest diagnosis, and other low-tech solutions help? How can we work together to reduce the amount and number of pesticides used per acre? This is a cost as well as something that we're having difficulty keeping our arms around the impact. And how can we, in good faith, work together to support our own sustainable future? I want to congratulate the CDRC. I'm eager to report the results. I think they all are working in a way that is rare, and it's important, and they should all get credit for that. If you have more questions, if you want more information, here is my personal email. Here is our website to talk about pollinators or the CDRC. I want to give credit to the photos, which I think you've enjoyed these beautiful photos, but I want to also urge us all to get together and move forward together. Thank you.